of tune in lazily, tweeting stuff so hastily. What is it spelling on a Sunday afternoon? On the radio. On the radio. On the radio.
DS106 Radio.
Turn it on.
DS106 Radio.
Turn it up.
Is there anybody out there on TV on the satellite radio?
DS106 Radio.
Big Daddy only here. Are you listening to me on the satellite radio?
DS106 Radio.
As the galaxy's in where the stars burn wide. Are you tuning in and turning on?
DS106 Radio.
Is there anybody listening to Earth tonight on the satellite radio?
DS106 Radio. DS106 Radio.
Well, if you hadn't guessed, folks, this is DS106 Radio. And this is John Johnson. I'm futzing splendidly with Mariana here. And
this is
the DS106 Good Spell. And this is one, or actually two tonight, of 106 bullets from a blog post, 106, published by the DS106 Shrink at 106 AM on Tumblr at the end of the Headless 13 run of DS106. Mantras and Cones, if you like, that explore the open online course Digital Storytelling 106. Meditations and Rambles about education, openness, open education, art, fun and learning. I'm John Johnson, and with me as usual is Mariana. Yes. Hi, Mariana. How are you doing?
Hello. Have you just read Rochelle's tweet?
I think I have to stop reading Twitter at the same time as doing this because it makes it confusing.
Let's be honest. I don't think anybody who is listening to us would not have Twitter on as well. Mm. So I suppose they'd see the tweets too.
Yeah. So, but thank you, Rochelle. And according to, we're broadcasting clearly, so there's a...
Yes.
Not maybe a first, but not necessarily a regular occurrence. I actually think, and this is going way off topic, but might be interesting to other people, that one of my problems with Nicecast is I use two completely different setups on Sunday and Monday. And if I don't get the right bits and pieces ticked, I tend to... go off tune. Anyway, here we are.
We're on and broadcasting clearly DS106 Radio for live.
Yeah, and we're dealing with bullets, two bullets tonight, bullets number 50 and number 51 of the 106. And I'll maybe just read out the first one and then see where we're going with this. The more that we rely on the web to hold our memories, the less we remember and the less we attend to the moment. Is this the future we want?
Blimey.
Or deep, Mariana, deep.
You want to read the other one?
Yeah, we'll get them both bullets in the bullseye straight away then. The difficulties of a world with perfect recollection is that everything becomes the same.
So I put them together because they were about both about remembering or forgetting, both about what is the implication of our kind of, one could say, obsession with archiving and keeping everything, and what might be some of the consequences of that. So that's why I thought it would be those two would go nicely together for 1 week, because they have themes that echo with each other.
One of the first sort of notes you've got is something that was posted way back in August 2013, so a couple of years ago, and it's I guess a quote and an image, and I'm presuming this was a DS106 sort of assignment or Daily Create or something. It's a quote, and it says, there are also certain difficulties associated with the world of perfect recollection. A recent discussion on the website Quora, Explorer about what it's like to have a photographic memory gives a taste. It's nice for passing college courses, but it also makes everything seem the same.
You have a lovely voice to read things.
Thank you, Maya. It's okay if they're short. Once I get past a couple of sentences, I think I start tripping over my tongue. I'll keep them short.
Isn't it an amazing, I don't know, I think the bad part about that quote is that it was in the early days of me doing the S106, so it has no attribution, so I do not know who said it, why, or where it comes from. But I do remember it making a huge impact on me, the comparison with a photographic memory. Because from my psychology background, I do know that, you know, there are some, whilst people envy those that, you know, have that kind of a ability to recollect things, it does have some serious negative implications for people leading a normal life. So it really did, you know, strike me that, you know, in a way, the very thing that we are kind of grateful in a way that computers allow us to do, this archiving, remembering, you know, searching, recalling, like you just did, you know, recall what I was doing 2 years ago when I made that daily create. That you know, the better it gets and the more that we are able to have accuracy in that way, the more that in a way it's that is this notion that, you know, everything becomes the same because you don't have that sense of salience or special memories because, you know, everything is there. It's one way of thinking of it anyway.
Yeah. I don't know, because I quite like having a big pile of photographs, and mine don't go back that far because before digital I didn't really take that many photos, and I certainly don't look at them as often as I would digital. And I don't even look at the vast number of photographs we gather on Flickr that often. But sometimes, you know, you go back to look for something particular because you're half remembering it, and that's useful. And sometimes you just stumble across something of yourself, and that's interesting. I don't think I feel quite as negative as that, although I'm guessing that, there's other problems to do with this, like, you know, what happens to it in the long run. And, yeah, it's something we've only been doing for a really short length of time.
Yeah.
I mean, it's for most people, probably 2000 and something. If somebody's been posting regularly online since 2000 and something, they're an old timer.
Yeah,
we haven't even figured, you know, so the services, and we've talked about this sort of thing before. This is kind of linked, you know. We've got this idea here of perfect recollection, but half the services we use for that perfect recollection will disappear. And if we stick it on, you know, a local hard disk, well, the format for that is probably going to change. You know, have we got a system that's ready for this yet?
I guess the answer is, you know, certainly not yet. But it is interesting, isn't it? You raised this whole thing about, which I think is the kind of dynamic that is played out from a psychological point of view, this whole thing about permanence versus impermanence, or things, you know, that. So what is the purpose? What is the aim? What are you thinking when you're putting things online? Is it about archiving and having access, or is it more about the kind of impermanence of a conversation? Like one might think about Twitter, yet we keep archives of Twitter conversations too. So there is, I think there is something very fundamental human desire, need to hang on to things, if I could put it simply, right? We want to hang on to memories, we want to hang on. It's the aim of, you know, taking photographs and putting albums together and so on. But in a way, the better the archiving becomes, I guess, you know, that's where, you know, there is a kind of tipping point, I think. It's being just a lovely thing to do. And maybe, you know, it turns into something that actually takes something away from our humanity, or could do in the future. I don't know.
So maybe we've got to learn to selectively do the archiving, basically. And I know there are now various apps and things for phones where you can send a sort of, this message will self-destruct in, tick, 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 so that you don't have that memory thing. And maybe we've just got to kind of, I say it seems really early days, that we've got to learn how to deal with this and learn how to, you know, what's the sort of thing I do want to keep.
David is saying, is kind of just emphasizing what you were just saying, how the as formats are constantly shifting, then, you know, it means that often, you know, digital memories is, you know, very easily lost, he says. And of course, you know, that we know that, and there is some truth in that. A lot of truth in that. As you were saying, there are so many things that just, you know, they, from one day to the next, they go, okay, we're closing it down now. And, you know, if you're lucky, they let you have your stuff, but, you know, often they don't. But you know, I don't know how many people have that awareness, and there are already in people, organizations that are making money out of, you know, helping people archive their lives for future generations and put themselves online for future generations. So, yeah, it's interesting how this kind of need to preserve, to keep, to hang on, gets tapped into, and it's not always something that people are making a free choice, or that they're even aware of some of the implications of putting their data online in that kind of way.
Rochelle saying archiving is great for asynchronous communication, so I think that's something that we're doing here. We're talking, and people can listen to this. David just said posthumous. That goes right through my heart. I'm so much invested in that.
Oh, you're such oldies, you two.
Oh, no, that's...
Who's ever done any of that?
No.
That means...
David, I had... we had 2 gigabytes of Edge Talk audio in posthumous, and I had another 9,000 posts of my own, or 900 posts of my own, rather, and it took me ages to glue it back together. Yeah, I remember posthumous really well. But this idea that, that's one of the reasons it's useful is because it's not for keeping it forever, it's just useful because I can take a photograph and show you it tomorrow.
Yes.
Or, you know, if something comes up and you think, oh, there's something in my archive that will deal with that, I think is handy. And I think it's like, I just was thinking the other day that we really are, the technology we've got, it's like a world of wonder almost. As I was going for a wee walk the other day, just up from Glasgow to Mogai, walking up a river, and as I was doing that, I had my phone, so I was taking photographs. I was taking a few notes of things I saw. There's an app on my phone that does just beautiful macro photographs for a phone. And I come back and I've got this trail of it and a record of things, you know. And it's just amazing compared to what you could do when I was young. And I remember one of the things I was really keen on as a teenager was, I think it was the British Mammal Society or something, did mammal recording. So if you saw a mammal, you'd take a note of it and you go home, and I think there was chart, you know, things to fill out. You filled them out in handwriting, of course, and you had to get an Ordnance Survey map and figure out the grid reference and all the rest of it, and then fill all the details in and post it off through the post office. And they've got an app now.
Yeah.
So the other day I found a dead shrew. So I can look at the app, I can take a photograph of it, I think this is a pygmy shrew, not a common shrew, and send it off to them. Bang, that's it. And it's just... wow, you know, that just for finding stuff out, for the number of shrews you get is obviously advancing the state of human knowledge quite a lot.
But what a wonderful description of a kind of process. You know, what the complexity and the commitment that your first description required in order to get, you know, do it, put it all to go to the, remember to go to the post office, remember to get the bloody stamp, remember to all of these things versus what the second thing and the ease of that, you know. I guess you are describing a kind of the process of transition and how it kind of becomes easier and easier, and there is something very beautiful, I think, about that, isn't there? Our ability to do that, and as Rochelle was saying, that this kind of ability that it gives us to talk asynchronously, where you can have, you know, a kind of, you know, in a funny kind of way, we always complain about the stream being fast and complain about, you know, the speed of things. But in a funny kind of way, it does also allow for slow conversation, because you can have conversations over days. Can't you, when somebody leaves something on and you go, okay, well, I'll just go away and think about that, and then you come back and you can read it again and you can pick it up and you can carry on. And I guess that's what Rochelle is referring to, which can give you something that is really quite special, that isn't, that actually is different from what we can do when we are face to face in the same space.
That opportunity to consider, which maybe don't take all the time because it is, you know, you think it's fast, but if you actually do, and I think this is maybe something to do with blogging as compared to Twitter, is that, you know, it gives you that wait time where you might deflate your passion a wee bit and spend some time thinking a bit harder rather than knee-jerking. So...
But I guess, you know, it goes back to, you know, a theme that we've touched on before, which is, you know, it's less about the technology, the tool, the platform, more about what is our intention, how we choose to use it. I do think that an over reliance on what you can find and you can store. Does mean, I think it was Doug who was talking with you last week, about how, you know, he takes time out in order to catch up with everything that he's put in pocket or his read later app. Because we do have this tendency of, you know, we keep stuff because we can read it later, because we can keep it. If it was paper, I mean, I'm just going to talk for myself because I'm sure you're not like that at all, John. If it was paper, I don't think I could get through my door with all the stuff that I keep.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just me, I'm sure. Yeah. Nobody else
is like that. Nobody else would have a big pile of...
Everyone is right up to date with their pocket reading, I'm sure.
Yeah. But it's these things. I mean, they've got obviously got a negative side, but it is this... It's almost miraculous. It's like if you can't, in the memory thing, you can't remember something, you can pick out your phone, you can find out about it, you can get access to information at a wondrous level. You know, you can find a beetle and you don't know what kind of beetle it is, and you can copy that, paste it into Google, the actual picture, and it'll find other pictures of it. And, you know, it's just, that is... It's almost unbelievable if you think from when I was young. Certainly, you know, the idea is amazing, and maybe there obviously will be drawbacks to this sort of thing and all sorts of things to work out.
The thing that I keep consistently hearing and thus concern me, you know, you read about it, but also people that I work with, you know, people consistently say to me they no longer find any time to read. You know, that they don't long form and a book and sit down and concentrate. Mm. And it's quite a regular occurrence that people would say, I can't remember the last time that I sat down and really, you know, got involved and engaged in a book. You know, and I do wonder about that.
I was on another The Edge Talk podcast. I was talking to a teacher in Scotland here, Kenny Piper, about that very thing, because he took time off in the summer basically to read War and Peace because he felt he was, you know, he wasn't keeping up with, he wasn't able to read for long periods of time.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly I can remember in my youth, I probably read, my teenage years, probably 4 books a week.
Mm.
And probably now I read not quite 1 book every 4 weeks, but it's getting to that. But one of the reasons I did it was because very often there wasn't very much else to do. You know, and I don't think, I mean, and some people are, obviously, I don't think I'm a particularly literary person, but I remember certainly at the end of primary school, my mother was convinced I was going to be a writer because I read so many books. And I don't think it was because I have any talent for English at all. And I mean, I think I've now clocked up 250,000 words on my blog and none of them are articulate, really. I'm not a writer. I just chirp away.
You often say that.
Yeah, but if you read what I write, it just sounds like me talking, really. I have no notion even or understanding of craft. It's quite interesting. Both my wife and daughter are very literary, and they will analyse a piece of text where I'll just read it to find out what happens next, really. But I read, in my teenage years, I read War and Peace, you read all these things, and I think somehow it was maybe there just wasn't the same other things you would do that might be more useful. And the other thing I wonder is, reading's only been around for a relatively short period of time.
Mm. You think we might be evolving into,
maybe
something,
we're passing,
better,
maybe,
into something better than reading.
Maybe we're passing through it. I don't know. I mean,
dare you. You can't possibly. I cannot even contemplate.
Yeah. maybe that's what's happening. You know, I don't know. When did Gutenberg kick off the print press? When did reading become democratic? And then that's not that long ago.
No, it's true.
Of
course, if you start to then get into the realm of science fiction with this particular theme, you go all the way to Black Mirror and the idea of of the grain, which I'll explain a bit for those who don't know anything about it. But the idea of the grain is basically this little gadget that it's like an implant. X many years from now, science fiction future sort of thing. This little implant that basically records everything that is happening to you. So the whole thing about this episode of Black Mirror talks about the kind of implications of that, and you're able to review and run and the episode basically shows you, people, they come at the end of the day from work and instead of watching a TV show or whatever, they sit down with their significant other to review the day, to review the interview they had, and how do you think that went and what do you think, because you can have absolutely perfect recollection. You can literally watch the video of everything that has happened to you. it isn't that far fetched when you think about the Google Glass thing. Mm-hmm. You think about all of these things, and the idea of having access to a device that allows you to do that. And I don't know that I would have the willpower to say no, And I also think it's a really crap idea.
Well, yeah, because you end up starting watching a video of you watching a video of... and you'll have no time. But yeah, it's kind of a horrible idea, but maybe it could be used, again, selectively, so you could learn things about yourself and you could handle yourself better. Yeah, I think there's probably more chance of me writing a book about in GIFs than anything else.
that is a really interesting development. Talking to you about the idea, talking to your idea of maybe the kind of reading on paper and the kind of way that, is something that we are evolving to something else. There are those that would argue that, you know, there is this book called The Fall of the Word, The Rise of the Image. And the implication in the book is precisely that, that effectively what we're doing, you know, the idea, it's not that far-fetched, the idea of, you know, a book in GIFs or emojis. So I think there is, you know, something about how we are using the image, things like animated GIFs and things like emojis, in order basically to cut down the number of words that we have to write. I mean, that is underlying what we why we do it. How long would it take you to describe the exact nature of, you know, an animated GIF that you make, or you know, two or three emojis that you put on a text? And I think there is a kind of, you know, sense of efficiency in language with that. And I don't know how I feel about it. I'm torn, because, as you know, I love images in, you know, in the form of both emojis, animated GIFs, and icons and things like that. I also, there is a part of me that loves the craft of language and what it means to craft a paragraph and to spend days on a sentence so that it is just so. But that's, I guess, the writer in me talking.
Yeah, but there's also a minute that strikes me as Stephen Downes speaking in Lolcat's presentation. I don't know if you've ever heard that, but he talks about lolcats and the way that they become a language for people. But basically, because they know the backstory of the image or the cult or the meme that's going on, you know, they recognize some bits of it. And that, to me, is the same with language. If you read a lot of poets, for instance, that sometimes you can't understand them at all unless you know what they're referring to. You know, it may be completely opaque to you. There's lots of stuff, there's poets who write in that they're referencing like mad all the way through, like thousands of references, and you may be only getting 10% of those. Language, maybe in GIFs, aren't that far apart. You know, you only understand what you understand. We're kind of veering a wee bit far away from what we're talking about there. Sorry about that.
We're always so on point, aren't we?
Yep. Yeah, I think so. I can't remember, though, whether I have to listen back to a previous show and have perfect recollection then.
That's right.
So there's a couple of other things that you mentioned in the notes, and one I'm wanting to hear a bit more about. There's a Black Mirror series, which you've just talked about, this idea about, and I think people have kind of almost done that. There's one or two scientists who have ran around recording pretty much their whole day. But you've also posted a link to this, and I'm not sure if I'll pronounce it right, Eter9, E-T-E-R, numeral 9.
Eter9 is how I've heard it pronounced.
Yeah. So it's eter9.com.
Yeah. And that's I guess also a connection for me with, you know, the sort of Black Mirror dystopia, but it's happening right now. It's a site that is effectively marketed to allow you to create what they call a counterpart. You join it now and you start gathering information and interacting in it. It's like a social media site. And the idea behind it is that when you're dead, your counterpart can carry on interacting with those that, you know, your family, friends and people, as if you were still alive.
Oh, I thought it, when I was just reading the front page, I thought it was like, you know, one of these buffer type things where if you weren't busy online, it would appear you were, you know, make the most of your,
it's science fiction and not. I think it's really quite scary.
Yeah.
There is an episode in Black Mirror that I think it's called "I'll Be Right Back," and they take this to the kind of the next logical step, where you can create basically an artificial being with all your social media footprint. And effectively, it creates another you that the person who is mourning the husband, in this case, they've just lost, they can basically have him back. And it's through using all the social media and all the sort of their online life, it uses it all in order to create this artificial life. We can't even start to go into the implications of that, but what is, what is interesting is that basically this site exists today, and it's effectively selling you the idea as if it is a good thing. I'll tell you about Black Mirror in 1 minute, Rochelle. Yes, it is available in the US. I'm just looking at Twitter. The fact that, you know, now its effect is saying to you, you know, wouldn't it be a wonderful thing if when you are not there, you could exist eternally? It's hence the Eternine. Mm-hmm. So you never die. Imagine, you know, this appeals to the worst instincts in human beings, really. So you could live forever. So why don't you start now? Join now, and you might never die. You'll be there for the 100, for the daily create today.
As long as it can hook up to YouTube and all the rest of it, fine. It can post a video for me when I'm 107. Fantastic. The only sort of benign parallel of this strikes, because obviously, as you say, it's pretty horrific, is an educational example when people create a Twitter account for a historical figure and tweet in real time.
I find that really quite spooky. I don't follow any of them, even the people that.
I've seen it used in classes, you know, with kids.
Yes, I can see. Yeah.
So they can follow, General Patton or something like this through the Second World War, or just. This accounts for the Second World War, which is useful. And maybe if you had the ability to create this sort of artificial, imagine you could have a conversation with somebody really famous after they're dead, and it's not really, you know, that sort of thing.
Well, because it's the idea exactly that if you start to engage with it, it starts to develop. That's why it's called your counterpart. So it starts to develop your personality on the basis of how much you interact. So suppose that, we are both dead, we decided to do this thing and our counterparts live on, as it were, and that we ended up being, you know, really famous and important and, you know, made a huge difference in some kind of area. Well, people could carry on talking to us. Yeah. Well, I don't know how I feel about that.
106,000 bullets.
106,000 bullets in. Oh dear God!
Yeah. That's quite a scary thought, isn't it? I think we'll probably not.
Quite a scary thought.
We'll not set up these accounts just in case our counterparts got the power of podcasting in the future.
and then our million listener, poor Rochelle, would have to keep on listening for 106,000.
Yeah. With in case she could, her counterpart could do it for her.
That's right, she could set up her counterpart and then she wouldn't even have to listen now for that matter.
Yeah. But I can completely see how that is, slightly weird. Although I was thinking today, you know, it's like when I go, my Flickr account, for instance, will vanish, and go and, well, I don't know. I don't know if I'm worried at all because I won't be there to see it go unless Flickr. In fact, it's probably likely that Flickr will go before me. Touches, given the life of online companies so far. But it gives you a slight wonder what will happen to all the stuff we are putting out there.
To talk sensibly about it for a little while, Google and others. Have thought about it, and Google has what it calls an account activity manager. And if you, we probably ought to put, because this is a sensible thing to do, we ought to put the link there for people. And so what it's, what it, this account manager basically asks you, what do you want to happen, you know, when you die with your data? Hmm. And you can set it up to, you know, to delete everything, after 6 months, to do this, to stay, to, you know, it's got various options as ever with Google. Mm-hmm. And so, I'm avoiding Twitter because I can see the jokes that are going on now, but I'm going to not look. But because it's a useful thing. It's, I think it's called the Account Activity Manager. And so I've set it, for example, that, you know, it sends a message to people, and then it deletes everything after six months of inactivity in the account. So, you know, that way, if you don't want things to continue and you want things to, and actually I think that is quite a sensible thing, because then not everybody wants to leave everything in limbo. Mm-hmm. Not everybody wants to have a counterpart to exist. I don't know how many zeros Alan has put in there. To exist forever. Yeah. Some people just want to die, you know, both physically and virtually. And I would be one of those, I have to say. So, but so there are, I suppose there are companies that are thinking about what to do with that, as much as there are companies that are trying to effectively appeal to human vanity to exist forever. Here, give me your money, and you can exist forever with a virtual counterpart.
Yeah.
Hmm. What shall I call mine? Oh, yeah. Goodness, can I name it? I think you can actually name it something else.
Ah, right, I've got a link. Thank you, Rochelle.
She's found it for us?
Yeah.
Okay, yes, inactive account, there you go. Thank you. Planning your digital afterlife.
Yeah. Oh, well, there's another fun job for next weekend. I'll do that.
Go with your black 2065 video where you 2065.
They could just, that could just, everything else could disappear into a black hole of of our content. Yeah.
Look, this is, yes. Alan. Alan says he doesn't want to have any of his digital content removed after he dies, because he wants to annoy future generations for as long as he can. Then Alan, you've got to join Ether 9 and create a counterpart. I'll join just to interact with it.
Both and many people read Alan's blog, and he obviously gets a great deal out of revisiting old photographs and things like that. So you can see from that point of view the value of these long-term things. And it's maybe we should curate a cut of it, maybe, I don't know, or just leave it all for perchance.
I kind of think that there is a, you know, similar to in real life, in physical life, when, you know, you argue about people having choice over, you know, whether they, you know, they want to end their lives when they're sick, and, you know, the assisted dying idea and all of that. Similar to that, I think in terms of your, you know, virtual thing, what would be really nice would be if, you know, you had the choice. You had the choice to keep things going, to have things delete, you know, after so many months, or, you know, to actually have an easier sense of, you don't have to keep everything if you don't want to, but if, you know, if you do. And I think that I love your notion of, you know, benign uses. I'm going to take that away, because I think there is something about, you know, in the same way as I can see the possible negative implications, there is this thing of, you know, what is the benign use? And I guess in our context it's educational. Mm. And you know, if one could look at that and then make purposeful choices about your content in that way. Maybe that is part of, you know, when we teach people about digital literacy and fluency, you know, part of that is about, you know, also think about what you want to do with your data, you know, when you're no longer there, or even when you are there, but you might not want to keep it there all the time.
Yeah.
The other side, you know, the stuff that's useful, you want to have access and have it easily searchable too. Like I now have with Pinboard. My goodness, I am so happy with Pinboard. But let's not start.
Yeah. I think we're probably getting to wrap up time. I just say to Rochelle, all my passwords are password one, so I shouldn't need to write very much in the will. I think we maybe haven't fully explored this topic, but we've probably kicked it around a wee bit. I'll hopefully get this up with the links, and we've got a good pile of links here on the web.
Mm-hmm.
Tomorrow.
Thank you, Rochelle, for finding us some as well. That's helpful.
I've got all these tabs open, so I'll get them, or we could pinboard them, but maybe more about that another time. I think it's been really interesting.
I have to say that I am, you know, as guilty as the next person. You know, I just love the fact that you can click a button and go, oh, look, that's what I was doing then, and look at that and there, you know, and oh, I didn't remember that. And of course, again, there are benign uses to that because it helps you learn about yourself and how you change and evolve. So, yeah, it's an interesting topic. More interesting than I thought it would be when we started, John.
There you go. And then just a last thought that's just struck me. In Bullet 50, you said the less we remember and the less we attend to the moment. But maybe if you can rely on a digital memory, you can spend more time concentrating in the moment.
Okay,
there
you go.
I don't know. You know,
with a thought. Well, I think my thought there was about our ability to attend, because we don't spend the time in deep attention, but we kind of just click the button for later, 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 and later never comes. Our ability to concentrate in the moment and to see the moment and to notice the moment, the kind of thing that you would do when you go taking photographs, is a moment of deep attention. Our ability, I believe, this is my belief, that, you know, I think that that is the thing that can suffer if you don't do this sort of thing intelligently.
I just mentioned I'm finding a lot of good hints about doing that on the still web Twitter account. I'm just looking at my phone now, which I shouldn't be, but I've saved a couple of screens there. Stop looking at your phone, look around you, which I think I'll use as a lock screen for a day or two, and see what happens, because I've been messing about with the stuff you're posting there, and it's very useful. So I would suggest, and I'll probably pop that in the show notes as well, that's worth a look if you're interested in just thinking about this stuff. It's a good focus, I think, or a good lens. That's the one I'm looking for. Anyhow, we have promised rambles. And I think we've rambled quite well, so we shall see everybody, metaphorically see everybody next time. Been great talking to you, Mariana, and I'll just look for some sort of bumper.
You know what would be brilliant, if you had the thing that you did with Rochelle a while back, that which was about remembering that song that Rochelle
send music.
That would be awesome to finish it. It's about, I wish I'd thought about it earlier. What was it? You know, the one where you had your radio project, where you had the stories and you had Seth and.
Oh, comes Seth. The time. Well, I haven't got.
Comes the time, yes.
I've got the music, so I think what we'll do is we'll just play out with Rochelle and Amber singing There Comes a Time.
Okay.
And the time for this podcast has come, and we'll have to wonder. I'm not going to stop. Right. Okay, here we go.
Bye. Oh, DS106 Radio for life.
For life.
If at first you don't succeed, then skydiving isn't for you.
Of course, I'm playing the wrong one. That's better.
Comes a time when you're drifting. Comes a time when you settle down. Comes a life, feelings lifting, lift that baby right up off the ground. Ooh, this old world keeps spinning round. It's a wonder tall trees ain't laying down. There comes a time, there comes a time. you and I. We were captured, we took our souls and we flew away. We were right, we were giving, that's how we kept what we gave away. Ooh, this old world keeps spinning round. It's a wonder tall trees ain't laying down. There comes a time, there comes a time, comes a time when you're drifting, comes a time when you settle down. Comes a life, feelings lifting, lift that baby right up off the ground. Ooh, this old world keeps spinning round. It's a wonder tall trees ain't laying down. There comes a time, there comes a time, there comes a time.